but Pappus took up a position opposite the general Machaerus, while Herod, after capturing five towns, killed about 2,000 men caught inside and burned the towns themselves, then turned back against Pappus. Pappus had encamped near a village called Isene, and many had flocked to him from Jericho and the rest of Judea. When Herod drew near, the enemy came out against him rashly. He engaged them and won the battle, and, avenging his brother, pursued them as they fled into the village, killing as he went. The houses were packed with armed men, and some fled up onto the roofs. He overcame these two, and, tearing open the roofs of the houses, saw the rooms below crammed full of soldiers huddled together. His men hurled stones down on them from above and killed them in heaps, one upon another, the most terrible sight of that whole war, the countless dead lying one on another within the walls. This action above all broke the enemy's spirit as they waited to see what would happen next, for they could see the great numbers who had gathered near the village fleeing. Had a deep storm not held it back, the king's army, emboldened by its victory, would have reached Jerusalem itself and finished the whole business. Indeed, Antigonus was already considering complete flight and abandoning the city. But as it was late, the king ordered his soldiers to take their meal, while he himself, exhausted, went into a room to bathe. There too the greatest danger befell him, from which he escaped by God's providence. While he was naked, bathing with only one attendant boy, in the inner room, some of the enemy, armed, had fled there in fear. And in the midst of his bathing, the first of them slipped out holding a bare sword and went through the doors, and after him a second and a third, likewise armed, doing the king no harm out of sheer shock, content only to escape unharmed themselves. The next day he cut off Pappus's head, for he had been killed, and sent it to Pheroras as payment for what his brother had suffered, since Pappus had been the very one who killed him. When the storm ended, he broke camp and came near Jerusalem, encamping close to the city. This was now the third year since he had been proclaimed king at Rome. He shifted his camp, and coming near the wall at its most vulnerable point, encamped before the temple, intending to assault it there, just as Pompey once had before him. Dividing the ground with three earthworks, he raised towers, employing a great workforce for the task and cutting down the surrounding timber. Having set suitable men in charge of the works, while the army was still encamped there, he himself went off to Samaria for his wedding, to marry the daughter of Alexander, son of Aristobulus, to whom he had been betrothed, as I have said before. After the wedding, Sosius came through Phoenicia, having sent his forces ahead through the interior, and the army arrived as well, a great number of horse and foot. The king, too, came from Samaria, bringing no small force in addition to his earlier army. Together they numbered about 30,000. All of them gathered before the wall of Jerusalem and took up position by the north wall of the city. The army consisted of 11 legions of infantry, 6,000 cavalry, and other auxiliaries from Syria, under two commanders, Sosius, sent by Antony as an ally, and Herod on his own behalf, since the Senate had stripped Antigonus of power, declared him an enemy, and made Herod king in his place by decree of the Senate. With great eagerness and rivalry, since the whole multitude had assembled together, the Jews fought against Herod's forces, shut in as they were within the wall. They kept proclaiming many things about the temple and many words meant to encourage the people, insisting that God would rescue them from their dangers. They removed everything outside the city, so that nothing that could serve as food would be left for men or beasts, and by secretly resorting to brigandage they created great scarcity. When Herod noticed this, he set ambushes against the raiders at the most strategic points, and to secure supplies, sent detachments of soldiers far off to bring in provisions, so that in a short time abundance of necessities was restored. The three earthworks rose steadily, since a large workforce was employed and progress was easy. It was summer, and nothing hindered the work, neither weather nor the laborers. They brought up siege engines and began to batter the wall, trying every kind of assault. Yet they did not overawe those inside. The defenders devised no few countermeasures of their own against what was being done to them, sallying out to burn the half-finished works as well as those already completed. When it came to hand-to-hand fighting, they proved no less bold than the Romans, though inferior in skill. Against the siege engines, they built counterwalls as the first structures were demolished, met the besiegers underground in mining operations, and fought on, driven more by desperation than foresight, clinging to the war to the very end. Even though a great army surrounded them, and they were worn down by hunger and lack of provisions, for it happened to be a sabbatical year. 20 picked men were the first to climb onto the wall, followed by Sosius's centurions. The first wall was taken after 40 days, the second after 15. Some of the porticos around the temple were burned. Herod accused Antigonus of setting the fire, seeking thereby to earn himself hatred from the Jews. Once the outer temple and the lower city had been taken, the Jews fled into the inner temple and the upper city. Fearing that the Romans would prevent them from carrying out their daily sacrifices to God, they sent envoys asking to be allowed only to bring in animals for sacrifice. Herod granted this, expecting that they would thereby give in. But when he saw that nothing of what he had hoped for was happening, and that they were holding out firmly for Antigonus's kingship, he pressed the attack with full force and took the city. At once everything was filled with slaughter, the Romans enraged at the length of the siege, and Herod's Jewish forces determined to leave none of their rivals alive. Vast numbers were butchered, crowded together in the alleys and in the houses, and taking refuge in the temple itself. There was no pity for infants, none for old age, none sparing for the weakness of women, though the king sent word around urging restraint. No one held his hand, but as if possessed they cut down every age alike. At this point Antigonus, giving no thought to either his former or his present fortune, came down from the fortress and fell at Sosius's feet. Sosius, feeling no pity for his change of fortune, laughed at him without restraint and called him Antigone. Yet did not release him free from guard as one would a woman, but kept him bound and under watch. Once he had mastered the enemy, Herod took care also to master his foreign allies, for the mass of foreign troops was eager to view the temple and the holy things within the sanctuary. The king restrained them, some by persuasion, some by threats, and some even by force of arms, judging that such a victory would be worse than a defeat if any of the things forbidden to be seen were seen by them. He also put a stop to the plundering of the city, protesting strongly to Sosius, asking whether, after the Romans had stripped the city of money and men, they meant to leave him king of a desert, and whether, given so great a slaughter of citizens, he reckoned even mastery of the whole world too small a price. When Sosius replied that it was only just to allow the soldiers plunder in place of the hardships of the siege, Herod said he himself would pay each man his reward out of his own funds. Thus, having in effect bought back the rest of the city, he made good his promises. He rewarded each soldier handsomely, the officers in proportion, and Sosius himself most royally of all, so that all went away well provided with money. This calamity befell the city of Jerusalem when Marcus Agrippa and Canidius Gallus were consuls at Rome, in the 185th Olympiad, in the third month, on the Feast of the Fast. As if by a cyclical repetition of the disaster that had befallen the Jews under Pompey, for they had been taken by him on that very same day, 27 years before. Sosius dedicated a golden crown to God and then withdrew from Jerusalem, taking Antigonus in chains to Antony. Herod, fearing that if Antigonus were kept under guard by Antony and brought to Rome, he might plead his case before the Senate, showing that he himself was of royal descent and Herod a commoner, and that his sons ought by birthright to reign, even if he himself had offended against the Romans, fearing all this, persuaded Antony with a large sum of money to put Antigonus to death. Once this was done, Herod was freed of his fear, and so the rule of the house of Asamoneus came to an end, after 126 years. It had been an illustrious and distinguished house, both for its lineage and for the honor of the priesthood, and for what its founders had achieved on the nation's behalf. But these men lost their rule through their strife against one another, and it passed to Herod, son of Antipater, of a commoner's house and private origin, a family that had been subject to kings. And this, as we have received it, was the end of the Asamonean line.